Today's talk deals with the question, what do you listen to? What you listen to is what you think, and what you think is what you will believe, and what you believe is what shapes your life into its current condition. So I think this topic is probably important to all of us. Recently, I've asked clients to draw a stick figure of a person with a modest-sized circle around it. And inside that circle, I ask them to put some plus signs and some minus signs. That figure represents them, right? That stick figure. The circle represents a few concepts, and the plus and minus signs represent energy patterns that we connect to, that they connect to, that we all connect to throughout our daily lives. So if we think of the circle as their personal energetic space, then you could say, inside of that personal energetic space is where we store all thoughts, all memories, feelings, all experiences, all visions, all goals, everything that we've seen, everything that we've heard, everything that we've said, everything that we've read, touched, all of our perceptions, our fears, our aspirations, our traumas, our triumphs, and our tragedies are stored in that personal energetic space. And that complete inventory of stuff, both conscious and unconscious, is inside of that circle. And not only is it just, we think those vibrations are sitting there, they're not just sitting on the shelf. They are actually permeating our body. They are permeating our cells as cellular memories. You know, there's a lot of talk now, and maybe it has been for a long time, about memory, but let me just define memory in a real simple fashion as saying it is a mental, emotional faculty of storing energy patterns for future recognition so we can actually increase our chances of surviving, not only as an organism, but the cells do it, the tissues do it in the body. So we're capturing this information. Okay, I'll use this as a reference of how to conduct my life later on. That is basically what memory is all about. So the minus signs within that circle of personal energetic space could be interpretations and conclusions of the energy patterns that we perceive as threats to our survival. We have an experience, we perceive it as painful, as diminishing us, as something not good. There is a minus sign in our inventory. The plus signs would be energetic patterns that we perceive as increasing our chances of survival. They increase our comfort, they give us what we want, we are able to acquire things that we want, and we're able to protect those things that we want from other people and things. So we would go, oh, that's positive. I like that. So those plus signs are throughout our inventory as well. You could say that the contents of that space, including the stick figure, including our physical bodies, are all information energy, or more accurately and more comprehensively, I could say it is consciousness. All of that information, plus signs, minus signs, stick figure, our bodies, our cells, is consciousness. I could say that that circle, another way to define it, I'll call it a fishbowl, and say it's us inside of the fishbowl. It's like glass in a fishbowl. That's what that circle is, consists of. And we can see out, we can see through the glass, and we think we see, I can see clearly, yeah. I always look through this filtering system, and I'm definitely seeing clearly. But unbeknownst to us, the glass is actually distorting us. The effects of that circle, those beliefs, those filters, they distort what we're seeing and the information that can actually reach us. Even people on the outside of a particular fishbowl, you know, we're looking at a fishbowl and go, I can see that person or that fish clearly. We also say the same thing when we view somebody else's behavior. We look at a person, our next door neighbor, somebody we see in public, or even a friend or a foe, and we go, I see this person clearly. That's not true. Because we're seeing that other person, that other thing, through the distortions of our own circle, our own filtering system, and their behaviors are also being distorted by the way they're processing information on us being inside of that circle and accessing these pluses and minuses as they go along, trying to increase their chances of survival. If we had two fish bowls and a fish in each one and we put them side by side, while the fish may think they're seeing one another clearly and they've got a good beat on what is reality, the fact is they wouldn't be seeing the other fish clearly because they would be going through the glass. They would be seeing distorted. So their perceptions would be distorted. Now, as I described the circle as a fishbowl and other ways to think of it, you probably have already jumped ahead and you got images firing in your own mind going, oh, he's talking about a wall, a force field, a shell, a prison, a shield, a protective casing, a filtering system that's constructed of my beliefs of what's threatening and what is not, and probably even more images. I'd say this is a trouble for most of us. The inventory of energy patterns largely consists of signals that we have caught, we've received through our five senses, and we've mentally evaluated in terms of our physical comfort and our survival, and depending on the emotional state at that time that we were doing the filtering and the evaluation. Another way to say this is that we gather information and judge its importances and quality using our most primitive capabilities, our five senses. And we overlook the reality that, depending on our emotional state, that it acts as another filtering or distorting factor in the way we process information, what we let in and what we block out. If learning experts like Glenn Doman and scientists like Bruce Lipton are correct, there is a tremendous absorption of information that occurs in the very early years of a child's life. It occurs faster in the early years than it does in later years. Glenn Doman says it is easier to teach a 3-year-old than a 4-year-old. It is easier to teach a 4-year-old than a 5-year-old. They are sponges of information. There's an upside and there's a downside to that idea. You know, the idea is that we can really acquire energy information at phenomenal rates as young children. And the upside is we can learn arithmetic very early, even before we're a year old, languages and music and social skills and physical skills at extraordinary levels of capability very, very young, very, very early in our lives. Now, the downside is that we can absorb information that is toxic to us. It'd be great if all parents went, oh, wow, and everybody in that child's environment understood that what they say and what they do and the vibrations they broadcast in the presence of an infant are infant right on up to adolescent, when we're receiving this information over that entire life from conception up until the point where we can start filtering up really effectively, we're adding plus and minus signals into this child's energetic field. And that those positive and negative energy patterns are going to be used as decision-making inputs for that person throughout life. So you can just imagine a whole bunch of negative inputs being delivered to a child at 5 years old, and here at 55 years old, that child is making decisions based upon those inputs from 50 years earlier. That would be problematic. It's only recently been known in brain science studies that humiliation can actually stunt the physical growth of a child's brain. Who said, And words can never hurt me, right? Sticks and stones and words can never hurt me. Yeah, they can. What we say to children can hurt them because we are stocking their shelves with these positive or minus negative signs and information. And this is the talk that they're going to listen to, not just when they're 5 years old, when it occurs, when you deliver, are you stupid? Not just that moment. But that question will recur to that child thousands and thousands of times over the course of their lives. They will access that question, that energy pattern, thousands of times, much to their disadvantage. All the images, and images I'm talking visual, auditory, kinesthetic, and these other things that we just describe as knowing. I just know that we're going to add those things to our inventory within our personal space. And the more we can add, the more choices, the more, clearly, the more positive we can add, the better off we're going to be. But it's as if we're adding options to the menu. We're adding items, courses of action, different thought processes, other possibilities added to the inventory that is available to this person as they go through life, trying to make decisions, trying to enhance their survival and the survival of other people, trying to serve needs, add value to the world, etc. The more positive, empowering, enlivening images that we've had added and ourselves add, the more effective we're going to be in life. Why? Because we have more resources. That's why. I mean, it's pretty straightforward, right? If you don't have the information, you don't have the information. So this idea of stocking the shelves should have been a key responsibility of parenting and authorities as we were growing up. And now, as we're older, it becomes our responsibility to be adding different information into our personal space so we have something else to listen to rather than what we've heard throughout our lives and certainly in our early years. You can imagine that the more negative, disempowering, frightening images we have, and just think you're going to access a frightening image just before you want to do something new, you'll be slamming on the brakes. That's not the best place to be. You really are at a disadvantage if we do that. So the more of these negative items in our inventory we have, the greater the likelihood is we're going to feel ineffective, right? We're going to feel ineffective. And then when it comes time to doing our behavior, we're going to, in our own belief systems, we will say we be ineffective, and then the doing follows that it too will be ineffective. What do you listen to? What do you listen to? Just being aware of that could help us. If we're like the chicken side of the egg, and we get to the point where we recognize, whoa, wait a minute, there's limited energy inside of my circle, and it's not going to allow for my continued growth. It's not going to allow me to achieve what I want to achieve in my life. I've got to reach out. I've got to do something. Well, I've got to break through this shell. I've got to get to the point where I can let new stuff in that I can listen to. I want more than I currently have inside of my circle. What's that more? Well, we could say it's growth, it's nutrition and nourishment, it's healing, it's protection, it's fulfillment of need, work, survival, be able to see the rhythms that are naturally occurring in all of life, and be able to perceive this spiritual system of law and order that is operational in our lives. The hatching chick pecks its way to a greater space, right? It's in this little space, it uses up all the resources in there, and says, I got to get out of here. What was protecting me earlier now is a prison. It was a protective covering in my younger time in existence, but now it's an imprisonment. Same with negative thoughts. Same with imprisoning thoughts. Same with childhood fantasies and other nonsense that's been fed to us over the course of our lives. We need to reach out spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically because we need greater awareness. We look around our lives and go, you know what, my life is not as abundant or as healthy or as happy or as stimulating or as valuable as it could be. What are we going to do? Stay inside the shell? Or are we going to make a decision to reach out? We recognize, or at least some of us, I think, that awareness is in that greatest space. We're not just the contents of what we've acquired up to this point, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years of life, but there's knowledge, there's awareness, there's consciousness outside of this shell that we've established to protect ourselves, protect our privacy, to establish our individual identity. It's what we're looking for is outside of that construct. What is that space? It's not really outside of us. It's more within us. that we don't see it, though, but that space is divine consciousness. That's what we can reach out to in thought and feeling and ask for enlightenment. That's the whole purpose of life, I think, is to experience and understand the presence of God in our lives. In not only our lives, but in the lives of everybody else. So how do you do that? Why would we want to do that? Well, if that's the purpose of life, and that's valuable, to be able to tune into the truth of existence, that growth, nutrition, nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, etc., then it's like, oh, it makes sense to get with the program. I think that concept, to experience and understand the presence of God in our lives, you know, that's like, huh, what? That's kind of, that might sound complex or really far off or way out there or unrealistic or impractical or not actionable, but I don't think it is. I think it's a lot simpler than we make it out to be. Let me reframe it this way. I think that God is actually as noticeable and even more so in our lives like water and waves are to a surfer. Now, very few surfers are going to go surfing without some form of wave. I suppose they can do it on snow and on sand, but water and waves, it's like a surfer would go, yeah, I rely on that. How about the wind beneath the wings of a flying bird? They just coast through the air. They float through the air. It's like that soaring, it's like, how does that happen? That's God. You think that's God? How about the sunshine warming the earth for the plants? How about rain watering the thirsty plants and watering the earth, helping cleansing? And if you look around, and I certainly see it in Florida, but anybody would see this anywhere they live in the world, the diversity of plants and animals and people. It's like, wow. There's not only one variety of each of those things, but in fact, an unbelievable variation. Have you ever looked at the fingers of a newborn baby? To me, that is one of the most amazing of all sights on planet Earth. This brand new baby, just hours old, you look at its fingertips, the fingernails, and it's like, that's just unbelievable. This miracle, how consciousness was shaped into this perfectly formed little hand. If that doesn't trigger awe and admiration for divine consciousness, how about the eyes of a doe, those beautiful eyes? I was outside a hotel room yesterday with my dog and an older man with a standard poodle, that's a full-size black poodle, was outside as well and started to go back into the hotel we're staying at. And this amazingly beautiful animal looked over at me and looked at my dog. My dog is a black toy poodle, 11 pounds. This one was gigantic in relationship to size. And this thing looked at me and looked at Nikki and then kept prancing in the most beautiful fashion. I had a compliment how beautiful the dog was to the owner, who just, yep, knew that automatically. I'm sure he's only heard that about a million times. But the way that dog looked at the two of us with such intelligence and recognition, it was like, wow. I've seen less intelligence in the eyes of a lot of human beings than I did in that dog yesterday. And how about a tear of joy just slowly making its way down from eye to cheek? Wouldn't you say, is that stuff God? Is that God? What do you listen to? I thought back the other day to a client who had cancer and died from the treatment and from the cancer. She knew she was going to get cancer consciously. You know why? Because she was told as a child that all the females in their family get cancer and die from it. And in order to reinforce that around the kitchen table and dining room table and wherever else those folks gathered, they would talk about it and go through the list of people who had succumbed to cancer. See, this is evidence that those people all get and die from cancer. I could say she was infected early on with this belief. They literally delivered this belief that she was vulnerable, and it was inevitable that she was going to get cancer. And at 7 years old, with all of these adults sitting around telling you, almost no one would have the ability to block that incoming energy, those environmental signals. Those things would fill her personal energetic space. And over the course of her life, she fed that belief. Because beliefs attune us to vibrations. They're like vibrations of those. They magnetize energy. If you have a belief A, it will draw evidence. It will draw like vibrations to it to sustain that idea. It's almost as if that belief needs more energy in order to grow. It wants to be alive, just like you and I want to be alive, just like puppy dogs and plants want to be alive. They will draw more energy to make themselves stronger. And you would go, yikes, because these negative consciousnesses, these lower vibration consciousness forms, are really what disease are. And you go, wow, we draw that energy to us, we attract it, we filter it, so we let that in. She let that in, but she clearly didn't let in over the course of her life that she didn't have to succumb to the same diseases other women in her family did. It was a choice. She didn't know that. She didn't research that. She didn't reach out for awareness of how else she could have dealt with this so as not to become victim to this belief. But she didn't know to do that. Parents, doctors, peers, priests, predators, protectors, they all provide energy patterns in the form of sound. Spoken words, right? People talk to us. Here, you're fill in the blank. You are, we are, I am, he is, and we add that to the inventory like we're adding tracks of a CD. Those sounds show up as self-talk. But, you know, one way to look at it is that maybe it's not self-talk because we didn't really originate them. We're just replaying previously recorded stuff. So maybe I'm playing an old recording from a different context from a person who is emotionally dysfunctional when I was in my most stressed situation. I'm going to play that recording and live my life accordingly. Yikes. If we actually put it in those terms, we wouldn't do it. We would say, wait a minute. I don't want to play that track because every time I do, I feel less than I did before. So let me find other tracks to play. What happens, because this stuff is so automatic, that our environment provides signals that triggers or activates these recordings. So without knowing it, you know, we're having the same conversation. We think we're talking to ourselves. We're playing a recording. Sometimes you can even hear the voice. It's like, oh, that's not my voice. Oh, I know whose voice that is. I even remember when that recording occurred for the very first time. Our hearing is clearly attuned to sounds that have aligned with our beliefs. Or we're going to hear stuff that's diametrically opposed. So imagine this. If you believe you are beautiful and somebody says you're beautiful, you'll take that in. But if you believe you are ugly and somebody says that you're beautiful, that is going to cause all kinds of negative physiological reactions in your body. One of the keys to self-help, the healing codes, and a lot of other modalities is changing these filters so that we don't operate on, I did hear I was ugly when I was 4, and I lived my life for the next 90 years using that as my organizing principle. Ooh, that doesn't make good sense. We don't want to do that. We want to be able to choose that are more aligned with our beliefs as compared to things that are, and our values. Let me say that, because sometimes our beliefs are one thing, but our values are another, which says we don't change our values, we change those beliefs. Those beliefs are just energy pattern. Not necessarily true at all. They're just made up. And so this idea of focusing our attention, and this happens for a lot of clients, focus our attention on events from long ago and just go over and over and over and over, and they practice investing energy in a negative experience. It's like finding a weed and then energizing it, watering it, paying attention to it, nurturing it, and then strengthening it. It's like, wait a minute. That's not what we want to do. That complicates our lives, feeding what we don't want. What do you listen to? You know, information that was told to us when we were children needs to be, in today's time, in current time, needs to be considered suspect for a few reasons. It's like, wait, let me evaluate it. We all know that the world is no longer judged to be flat, but it was believed to be flat for a very, very long time. And what happened? Somebody considered it and considered it and considered it and went, you know what? This is not true. Oh, wow. Okay. And we've been taught stuff that's thousands of years old that is not true. So we want to do our own reevaluation. A lot of people go, my belief says I don't have the power or the right to do that. I'm a follower. I'm not really a thinker. Well, that'd be the first thing you'd want to consider. Does that make any sense to you, that you have the ability to think, but you're not allowed to use it? I was like, So there are several reasons we'd want to reevaluate what we listen to in our heads. One is a lot of the information that was put into our inventory was done when we were children. And children get told things in simple terms that are not really sophisticated, not really valuable, not well-rounded, and they're delivered like that. So if they're going to deliver information to a child that a child can grasp, they're going to leave out a lot of nuances, right? And we're told stuff that is clearly not true. Remember being taught that there was a Santa Claus and an Easter Bunny and the Tooth Fairy? We were told they were real. I thought to myself, why do adults think it is better to perpetuate these untruths to children? Why do we lie to children about where Christmas presents come from, rather than to tell the child the truth? What if we told the child, you know, these gifts are primarily coming from your parents. You know, your parents need to work, earn money, create value out in the marketplace, and get paid. And they use that money to supply the needs of their family. And some of that money, if it's wisely handled or it's sufficiently acquired, can have money left over so they can buy Christmas presents. So it is participating in the economic life of a country is important to your parents in order to sustain and grow a family. Now, is it better to tell a kid, and if Santa's going to come down the chimney and deliver these things at night, we have to leave out cookies. We don't have a chimney. I don't understand. Isn't that weird? If we could explain to children how all of this happens, that parents who are more effective at creating income and are wiser at using that money enjoy Christmas much more than somebody who is less effective or who struggles financially. It's like, so if I want to enjoy Christmas when I'm a grown-up, it would pretty much help me if I were more economically capable? Yes, son and daughter, it would. But it's about more than just Christmas presents. And there's another area that would be valuable for children to learn. The second reason why we'd want to reevaluate what we think we already know, those pluses and minuses in our circle, is because besides being lied to as children, you know, because we weren't going to be sophisticated or intelligent enough to understand stuff, parents actually had different agendas with regard to us. Now, it would be wonderful if this were true. If their parents saw their roles as facilitators of our development, and then they would have talked to us more respectfully, help us to grow physically, emotionally, mentally, socially, spiritually, right? This whole deal, I'm all about your development. I want you to be an excellent, excellent decision maker, a caretaker of the earth, and to be able to relate socially to other people so you can understand understand that their self-interest is as valuable to them as your self-interest is to you. And if you cooperate rather than compete, the world be much more peaceful and loving and healthier place. Oh, that'd be cool. I happen to miss that lesson. On the other hand, if parents were more like this, and I'm glad I missed this lesson as well, that they saw that the kids as if they were somehow like dogs that need lots of control and obedience training, and they themselves are superior, tyrannically so, superior, and they know exactly what's right without any awareness at all, and then they would have treated those children much more harshly, much more dogmatically than the facilitators. Perhaps the worst part of our inventory is that we listen to that stuff that was created under the worst possible circumstances. These conditions involve malfunctioning authorities. I'm talking parents and teachers and priests and predators and peers who weren't able to manage their own thoughts or feelings or words or actions, and they overwhelmed or dominated us because they were so staticky. These events also occurred when we were under the most stress in that environment. We would have picked it up even if we didn't understand the words. We would have known, uh-oh, things are not good right here. Children sense that. Even little babies can pick that up and be frightened. So we would have been under the most stress, which means that our cognitive capabilities were the most diminished. So instead of being smartest, we were the dumbest we could possibly be. And then all of a sudden, we're taking in information that we can't accurately process. We're taking in awful energy, and we can't process it effectively. Guess what? The payload could be awful. And so now we're stuck with that stuff. And one of the things that's amazing to me as an observer, but also as a person who feels it, is that in these times where we have people competing for political office, the competition for votes and, frankly, they're looking for the votes only so they can get to the trough of money, power, and influence. They're basically pigs of wearing two different sets of labels. But during these campaigns, the languaging gets more aggressive and more hateful, and it's just absolutely unbelievable. And I'm thinking that what's happening here is these points of view that get activated. You know, you say, it's a common cliche that says you can't talk about politics or religion over cocktails at a cocktail party because it's not going to resolve. It's going to turn into a conflict of significant magnitude. Do not talk about politics or religion. I think what happens here is that as children, we buy into this stuff that we've been told. We listen to it for the rest of our lives, that this is the way things are. You can imagine that as being bigotry or prejudice or narrow-mindedness. That stuff is alive and well, and it wasn't developed later in life. It was developed very early in life as we were being pumped full of nonsense from people around us. So when this stuff gets activated in present-day conversations, you see people who were normal, apparently, a few minutes ago, turn into, you know, like maniacs, foaming and at the mouth sort of hostility. It's like, wow, that person's actually capable of murder over this topic of politics. It is amazing. So you would say this person in 2012 is actually listening to child talk. Child talk is stuff that's stuck in their inventory, in their personal space. They're accessing it and seeing it being threatened and now become homicidal with their 2012 body. Well, they got this information as a four-year-old, but now they're not a four-year-old. They're a 44 or a 54 or 64, 74, 84-year-old body. That's got significant potential to do damage to others. And then who do you listen to? Listening to the hate being spewed on television from the talking heads or from the coming out of your car radio, for instance, and listen to those words of prejudice and name-calling and low vibration trash. It's like, yikes. Wow. That stuff has been being delivered today, and it activates the stuff we may have heard as children. And so that we and you think if we listen to that stuff, we're going to start thinking that stuff, and we start thinking that stuff, we're going to believe that stuff, and then we're going to start to express that stuff in our thoughts and our feelings and our words and our action. And then you turn around and go, oh, my life is a mess. Well, you can't throw toxic stuff. You can't plant weeds without experiencing an unpleasant harvest. And how people listen to that stuff and get their anger exacerbated and then have nothing to do with it, it's just vroom, 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 vroom. They start redlining, and they don't recognize the damage to their health that starts to occur. It's like unbelievable. Don't listen to stuff that doesn't make you feel good. If we listen to stuff that produces negative feelings, ill health, bitterness, fear, we're listening to lies. And if those lies are in our inventory, we can heal them. And if they're outside of our inventory, but we're letting them in, we can stop that. I think if we consider what Christ said in Christ Returns reveals startling truth, and even the stories of some of the stuff he said in the Bible, it's going to be pretty obvious to us that if we start living and start listening to words of kindness, fairness, respect, equality, love, we're going to have a different experience in life. As we listen to those words and those vibrations, we're going to start to offer those to ourselves, and then we're going to start to offer them to the objects of our attention. You know, the people we think about, the people we talk to, the things that projects we're working on, the ideas, the puppies, everything we put our attention on is going to be the recipient of these higher vibration energies. Why? Because we're stocking our inventory filled with those things. They benefit, but so do we, because now we're planting a different type of seed energy. It's a whole different ball game. We're basically guaranteeing ourselves a wonderful harvest. We can listen to the love and those words and those actions that were demonstrated by Christ, or we can listen to human consciousness that is trying to grab what it wants, greed and fear that we see demonstrated on a daily basis, and we can become hateful and greedy like is being demonstrated. It's our choice of what to listen to. High vibration like Christ, or low vibration, like so much of what's going on in human consciousness. I'd like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 of Christ Returns, Reveal Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.